So do you know that the diocese actually had a workshop this year for those who are going to be preaching on this Sunday? Can you gather a question? Well, you know why? And Eric sent me the invitation, and I couldn't go, and I thought, well, if the diocese is questioning or encouraging us to take a look at this 250th anniversary in a time of such unrest, how am I going to approach this if the diocese doesn't know what we're doing? So I thought about it, and I take a look at Zechariah, what's it say? What's that first word right there? Rejoice. 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 Folks, we've made it through 250 years. My God, we rejoice. Some of you know that I taught American history for 20,000 years, and I loved it. I love our country, and I wouldn't have done it for that long if I really did not believe in this space and place that we live in and our values. And one of the things that I always taught it through the Constitution, there are some people in this world of ours that know the Constitution. And we went through the amendments, and then we spent most of the time on the Bill of Rights. And we went through American history looking at this. How did we change and how did we evolve? And we have been in these places for many, many times of one part of the country and another part, and somehow, and I'm not saying, I am not Pollyanna, but somehow we have created a new entity and we forged on. So rejoice. And then Jesus comes in and says in the gospel, come to me, all you that are weary and are carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. I feel like we're carrying a heavy burden right now. You know, I feel it myself. A few weeks ago, I think some of you know, I went camping in Montana and Wyoming and ended up the trip in Glacier National Park. If I'm honest, I went too early in the year. It was freezing, it was snowing, it was raining, and then there was a hailstorm. So, and a bear. But other than that, it was perfect. But during the hailstorm, I don't know if in Glacier, there is this wonderful Lake McDonald Lodge, and I thought, I've had it, I'm going in and I'm going to get warm. And I went in, and there must have been about 60 people in that small lodge room. And they were very loud, and they were drinking hot chocolate, and they were having a good time, and they were playing board games. And it was full of energy. And those of you who have been there, you know there's a piano over on the side. And so this man just kind of strolled over and he started playing the piano. And it was an amazing experience. He was a superb pianist. He wasn't just a kid. It was beautiful. And he started out with America the Beautiful. And people were still playing. And then he started to improvise. He went on for 10 minutes. And what happened was that the room became silent. Silent. And I looked around the room, and this was what was happening. You could see people were going into a very internal space. He had invited us into this space. And then I noticed something happening again. Tears were running down folks' faces. And I thought, we are in such an exquisite place in our country right now. We're at a turning point, and I think that everyone in that room was feeling it. I could feel it. I grabbed the man's hand and I said, "Thank you for playing that." And he said, "It's not a time for us to play the national anthem." And I thought, that wouldn't have happened in that room with the national anthem. We couldn't have had that unity for that moment. It was America the Beautiful that did it. And I feel deep sadness that we can't do the national anthem. I want to acknowledge that, but I don't think it would have pulled us to the place we were. So what was that place? Well, first, we were in one of the most beautiful places on this earth. One could feel the serenity of place. Second, we're on this painful path in our country, America the Beautiful. And how do we heal? How do we hold the values and love of a country in such a difficult time? And I think the pianist had given us a gift, a moment to pause and simply be in a communal experience. When is the last time you have been in a communal experience of peace and harmony in this country? And it came through this pianist, and I am so grateful for him. What did he give us? "Come to me, all you that are weary and are carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest." Well, there is a division of the two, and I'm going to try to weave this delicately. We all know there's a separation of church and state. And we also know that our nation's moral fabric has been fostered by the religious traditions that have created this nation. It's part of us. I'm not saying that we live up to the ideals, but they are there. They are through all of our documents, folks. Just read them. They are intertwined. I think that our faith has fostered our democracy and vice versa. Goes back and forth. You know, Jefferson wrote that beautiful phrase, "We are all created equal." And it didn't mean the same thing to Jefferson that it means to us, I think. Jefferson, it was the political idea. And the founders of our country, it was a political ideal, really. But it wasn't to the people who heard it. It wasn't to the slaves who heard it that Jefferson owned. It wasn't to the women, you know, who told her husband, "Remember the women." Did Mr. Adams hear that? I don't know. We go to the gospel. What is Jesus doing through the whole stories of the gospel? He's walking in a world where there is no equality, and he's walking up to people who are sick and tired. He's walking up to women. He's walking up to women who are menstruating. You don't do that, Jesus. He is going to people who are on the edge, and he is creating this beautiful community that we are all equal. And he died for that. I am not Pollyanna about this idea of equality. We fight for it. What does Jesus say? "You take on my yoke." If you take on my yoke, that is the gospel. Then we know that this peace can be within us. I think we make a choice this very short weekend of our 250th anniversary to put down the swords that divide this country. And for a wee time, as if that pianist gave us this time at Glacier, to reflect on this grand experiment of democracy, and can we uphold it? On September 18, 1787, as Benjamin Franklin was leaving Independence Hall in Philadelphia, at the close of the Constitutional Convention, a woman, Elizabeth Willing Powell, asked him, "Well, doctor, what have we got? A republic or a monarchy?" And Franklin immediately replied, "A republic, if we can keep it." Franklin knew the human condition, and we have at times failed miserably at honoring that very basic notion that we are created equal. But we ask forgiveness, and we move on. That is the nature of our country. And if we don't ask forgiveness, and forgiveness in this country takes a long time, by the way. You know, our Native American peoples waited a long time for that act of please forgive us. Jesus, "Come to me, all you that are weary and are carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest." And the Republic was not a certainty for the writer of America the Beautiful, written by Catherine Lee Bates. Catherine was born during the Civil War. She lived through World War I, and she also was still alive at the beginning of the Great Depression. She knew the heights and depths of the American story. But she was the daughter of a pastor, and that Christian belief story was in her American story. They were very twined. And for her, she said that the Gospels were the backbone of her life. Where was America the Beautiful first published? Well, of course, in a religious journal. Now, here I'm going to give you some facts about her that you may not have known. She was a Christian socialist, a professor of English at Wellesley College. She worked for immigrant rights, was a friend of labor unions, a fighter against urban slums, a feminist. She wrote essays against American imperialism, and she identified herself as a lesbian. Did you know that? I wonder if she would have gotten her poem published today. She had all of the points that would have been, I mean, right? But she had an advocate. One of them was Samuel Augustus Ward, and they never met, by the way, an Episcopal Church organist. And his music and her lyrics became almost our national anthem. It was one step away. So, after sitting in Glacier and listening to America the Beautiful, I went back to read the words, and they're in our bulletin this morning. And they lift the heart. As an educator, she crossed the country on a train on her way to a convention. In her lyrics, you travel with her as she crosses the country. The amber waves of grain, can you see them? Can you see them? Do you know what the Alabaster City was? Anybody? Yeah, Chicago. It was the whole white city of World's Exposition in 1893. And that exposition was to do what? To foster world interdependence, to have share the goods all around the world, that we would become one world community helping each other. But the place that hit her heart in the deepest place was the top of Pike's Peak, the Purple Mountain Majesties. She changed her poem three different times in her life. She felt that America was changing, and so her poem had to change too. I wonder if she was still alive, what would she add to it today? How would she move it? Because she was a woman who constantly was thinking and rechanging and recreating. She helped us carry our burdens. "Come to me, all you that are weary and are carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest." How about this fun fact? Joe Biden in 2021 and Donald Trump in 2025 both had America the Beautiful as the main part of their presidential inaugurations. Can this poem have a power of imagination that bypasses party politics? We're working through that right now, aren't we? We don't have the answer yet, but we're working it through. And one of the things that is in this particular poem, if you look at the front of it, at the very bottom, it says, something about till nobler men keep once again thy whiter jubilee. And I thought, what the heck does that mean? Anybody want to make a guess? So I looked it up, and I found out that nobler men means that the American character is not yet finished. We are rough pieces who are growing into both God's vision and the American vision that is written in our own constitution, our own view of who we would like to be. And that we as citizens need to forward that ideal. And then it comes to what? She says, we're forwarding the word of Jubilee. And Jubilee, it's a biblical term that goes back to the Hebrew tradition. Every 50 years in Jubilee, we had a cancellation of debt. Everyone was forgiven debt. Any indentured servant was set free. Oh, America, how about this one? And the return of ancestral lands to the original owners. Oh, wow. Well, God gives comfort to the oppressed, but what? We are the ones to give justice and comfort. We're the community that does that, folks. And what a line on which to end her poem. And an earlier line in this poem, she says that America should choose mercy more than life. Mercy more than life. Well, I would like to also add one more line from the poem. And it says, we live into the liberty of America the Beautiful through law. The Constitution, the Bill of Rights. Our gospel reading states that if we are going to have comfort as a people, we pick up the yoke. We pick up the yoke and we learn through Jesus' own life. It's not just comfort for comfort's sake. That would be obscene. We'd all be sitting home eating chocolate right now, right? I mean, I would. And there are many people in our current and past histories that have led us through their gospel vision of this poem. And I'm going to list but a few. Martin Luther King, civil rights leader and pastor. Mother Jones, advocate for the working poor. Fred Rogers, lover of children. John Muir, an environmentalist and founder of our national park system. Jimmy Carter, politician and worker for housing rights. Harriet Tubman, liberator. Reverend Dr. Pauli Murray, leader for racial, sexual, and gender equality. She was the first trans Episcopal priest, folks, if you don't know that. Eleanor Roosevelt, worker for civil liberties and the opening of the United Nations. Wendell Berry and Flannery O'Connor, writers who examined the beauty and faith in the American experience. Jimmy Carter, president and worker for housing rights. The Grimke sisters, abolitionists. Dorothy Day, fighter for social justice, particularly particularly for the rights of the farm workers. This is a very short list. I did it in about 10 minutes, and the list was so long, I thought that's the whole sermon. But these are folks that are working for a whiter jubilee. That's what they did. And they picked up their yoke. None of them had an easy time with any of this. The individuals brought comfort and rest to the multitudes. And I'm going to ask you to stop for a moment. And the list that I had were people who moved out of the Christian faith. I would say, Jesus, if he were here, he'd say, any faith that comes to this nation is the gift. It is a gift. And we accept that gift and we honor it. Anyone who comes to this nation is picking up the yoke. So I'd ask you just to think for a short time, is there a name? You know how we do on All Saints Sunday, where we just stand up and we call out a name, and the name doesn't have to be someone that we all know. Call up a name of someone that you know that picked up the yoke and brought the comfort that Jesus is talking about in the gospel. Just a moment of silence. So if you have a name, just stand up and call it out with your breath. Parker Palmer. Thank you. And then we've called out famous names. Think of the ones in your own life that taken on the yoke for the comfort. My grandfather formed the union for the bus drivers and the trolley drivers in Cleveland. Doesn't not a name you'd know of, but he spent his whole life working on that union, worked day and night. And I knew he was an important man when at his funeral, and they were all men at that time, I think 150 men walked with his coffin. And I said, you know, the heroes that have carried this nation, they're in our own families, they're our neighbors. They aren't just the ones who wrote the words of the declarations. That being said, I'm going to end with George Washington on this 250th anniversary of our republic. Observe good faith and justice towards all nations. Cultivate peace and harmony with all. Religion and morality enjoin this conduct, and can it be that good policy does not equally enjoin it? Can it be that Providence has not connected the permanent felicity of a nation with its virtue? The felicity, rejoice, Leviticus, is connected with the virtue of the nation. And we're going to finish this morning. Kim is giving us a gift. And I'm going to go back, and for our reflection time, just ring the bell, and Kim is going to gift us with America the Beautiful.